Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader Candy Lewis, along with her co-host, Bullet Lewis. We begin our program with some daily selections from Science of Mind, Guide for Spiritual Living. And again, this month's selections are from Margaret Stort, who passed away recently, and she wrote the Daily Guides annually for 50 years. We are republishing this set to honor Stort's and her contributions over the decades. Living in Security. Our evolution from now on will have to be through our conscious identification. Seminar Lectures by Ernest Holmes, page 47. The greatest good that can come to use is the knowing within us of an absolute certainty of ourselves and our relationship to the universe. The Science of Mind, page 180. Some of us are adrenaline junkies and need a great rush of internal chemicals to prove to ourselves we are truly alive. Many more of us, though, have no desire for such inner conflictions. We already have a developing sense of ourselves and prefer to increase in peace, love, and understanding on our own time and in our own ways when possible. We would rather feel secure within ourselves and our surroundings. Actually, we long for this, a place where we may safely return at the end of the day and feel comfortable in the company of loved ones. These days, our physical securities are being challenged. We are bombarded with threats to our well-being, and the media overstimulates us with horror stories everywhere. Yes, life can be uncertain and sometimes unpredictable, but when has it not been so? I doubt that there's ever been an era without something to fear. Today's fear is just faster and more furious. Where then can we find our peace, our calm, other than within, sometimes even when all sorts of things come at us from every direction? This is when our practices of trust, surrender, and openness to good, God, really make a difference. When there is no quiet path to follow in the world, we must listen for our own quiet path. Sometimes it has to be enough to know that God, Spirit, the universe is present, no matter what. Affirmation. I am the place where God stands forth in the world as me. I count on the flow of good within me to help me find harmony in the midst of chaos. Hanging in there. God cannot fail, and we shall cease failure when we identify ourselves with the Supreme Source. This Thing Called Life, page 41. So humans must be created with the possibility of limitless freedom and let alone to discover ourselves. The Science of Mind, page 109. There is wisdom in knowing when we're done with something, when it is time to release or shut down whatever may be going on, so we're not engaging in the fruitless use of precious energies. There is also great wisdom in knowing when it is right to hang in there, when the lack of pursuit will deny us an opportunity to make an important completion. The infinite mind has no opinions on how we use its energies. It does not waggle a finger at us or give a disapproving look if we do not complete all that we do. We know that the law of mind says yes to us. Yes, you want to go on. Yes, you want to cease this line of action. No judgments, no condemnation. It is only we who make these distinctions, which is why we need to be clear about when to stop or when to hang in. We can ask ourselves, is it really important to see this through, or is it an ego trip? Am I going to be adding something valuable to life so that my continued efforts are worthwhile? And not least, will my mental practices benefit from the concentrated effort required to find completion? It is always ours to say I will or I won't. This is what it means to have the freedom to use the infinite mind in service to our good. Affirmation. I am the place where God stands forth in the world as me. I know and value my place in life, and I know and value how to use my spiritual energies. And from the Daily Word, published by Unity, life. My life is what I make of it. When I think of my life as the most precious gift I could ever receive, it becomes natural to live each day with intention and reverence. Through my senses, I'm newly aware of the wonders that surround me. I feel enlivened and engaged by the colors, sounds, flavors, and sensations of the world. Through my relationships, I know love and the joy of living in harmony with others. Through appreciation of my body and mind, I realize wholeness and touch the peace and perfection of God, of Spirit, of the universe. The gift of my life is also the gift I give again and again. Each time I share my caring, compassionate impulses, the uniqueness of my creativity, or my loving service to another, I am giving back to life. Awake. I am awake and fully present to life. Awakening from sleep, I pause for a moment to feel the energy of a new day. Birds outside my window sing a greeting. My still-closed eyelids sense the morning light. Letting go of the delicious relaxation of sleep, I stretch my limbs, open my eyes, and rise from my bed. Awake, fully present in mind, body, and soul, to each activity of this day and to each person I meet, I feel truly connected. I engage fully with my daily work, study, prayer, and recreation. I notice details in my surroundings and see expressions of love and kindness I may have overlooked. Each moment becomes more vivid and meaningful. Nothing feels ordinary when I am awake. My life is a journey of discovery and appreciation. And from Mark Nepo's The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have. For what are we saving? If the love I have isn't working, what good is money? So often we put externals first. Out of worry, out of fear, out of obligation, we think we're being good Puritans by saying no to what stirs us. In the 60s, the well-known psychologist Abraham Maslow conceived of a hierarchy of needs in which he established that human beings must provide for basic physical needs, such as food and shelter, before they can attend to inner needs, such as self-esteem and right relationship. While this is in part true, I believe there is a dimension of the inner life that is as imperative and equivalent as food and shelter. Without the fulfillment of these basic inner needs, we're just fed and sheltered bodies void of life. Without love, truth, and compassion, all the comforts of modern life don't matter because we are simply reduced to biological machines, not even as present as animals. Without this understanding, we often defer the risk to love. I need to establish myself before I can get involved. I need nice clothes first. I've become physically desirable first. I'll eliminate all my problems first. We also defer love once it is before us, under the guise of safeguarding our future. I won't call long distance now because I'll need the money when I retire. I won't meet them at this concert now because I'll need money for a new car in 6 years. I can't afford to enter counseling with my partner because we need storm windows. Certainly, we have to balance and make choices, but with no love in the house, there is no need for storm windows. When I was ill, I faced the very real possibility of dying, and suddenly the little money I'd saved, however prudent I was, didn't matter. It was all worthless. It became immediately clear that the only true purpose of money was to help make love work. When ill, I didn't hesitate to make all those long-distance calls I always put off. I met friends at concerts and bought albums and sent flowers instead of waiting for the perfect occasion. I bought plane tickets to the Caribbean for my wife and my dearest friends, and we went. Once well, I couldn't go back to deferring my life under the guise of saving. I still save some, but now I feel compelled to use whatever money I can afford to make love work, to bring truth into being, to allow generosity and compassion to flourish. This is more than altruistic. It is necessary to be fully alive. It's part of the wood that keeps the inner fire burning. I am now forced to ask, beyond rent and health insurance, for what are we saving? If the love we have is not brought to life out here in the world, we risk saving for a future that may never come, or that in fact may find us just ghosts of spirit, unable to live it because we've squandered our chances to love along the way. Sit quietly and meditate on the love you carry for someone dear. Breathe deeply and allow yourself to feel that love and know it wants to express itself now. Without hurting yourself, without borrowing on your rent or spending money you don't have, act on the love you feel now. Do not defer its expression. Call, send flowers, gas up the car and go. If you truly don't have the money, call out with your love anyway and trust it to the universe. Be the love you feel now. We return now to Science of Mind for Reverend Dr. Sonia Cantrell Smith's monthly column, Everyday Spirituality. Your practice is your anchor. The universe is forever flowing in an endless circulation of life, and we are part of that flow. Ernest Holmes, Living the Science of Mind. This month's theme, The Flow of Coming and Going, invites us into a sacred exploration. Life is ever-changing, filled with the ebb and flow of circumstances, relationships, and experiences. Yet amidst this constant movement, there is an unchanging stillness within us, a divine essence always present, always whole, and always at peace. Holmes reminds us Life is a continuous process, a constant flow of the invisible into the visible. This profound truth speaks to the way spirit moves in, through, and as us, manifesting in the comings and goings of our days. Our spiritual practice becomes the anchor, allowing us to navigate this flow with grace and clarity, helping us awaken to the divine presence. Through meditation, we step into the silence and create space for spirit to speak. In mindfulness, we meet the moment as it is, without judgment or resistance, opening ourselves to the sacred and the ordinary. And in the practice of sitting in stillness, we touch the eternal within us, the part that is not moved by the noise of the world, but is deeply rooted in truth. This month, let's use these practices to cultivate self-awareness, becoming more attuned to the ways we may be distracted by thoughts of fear or doubt. As we turn within, we can release those distractions and remember we are expressions of divine love and wisdom. From this place of awareness, we can approach life's changes with faith, knowing that even in the transitions, spirit always flows toward our highest good. The invitation is to embrace the flow, meeting change with a heart open to growth and transformation. When we awaken from the illusion of separation, we realize the spirit that brings forth the sun, moon, planets, and stars is the same spirit that sustains us. Let us move forward together, grounded in our spiritual practices, and awake to our divinity, trusting that in every moment we are held in the infinite loving flow of spirit. And from the same issue, an article by Karen Wilmer, Seeing in the Dark, the Flow of Coming and Going. One frosty winter, before I had a child clamoring in the back seat, my first husband and I trekked 604 kilometers, 375 miles, from Kelowna, British Columbia, to Calgary, Alberta, to visit his family. The estimated drive was 7 hours, not including any stops along the way, and our plan was to do it all in one day. Climbing up toward the Rocky Mountains, everything went smoothly. Good tunes, new snow tires, cheap gas, and buoyed with the confidence of a rudimentary emergency kit in the back. Just the two of us on open road. Perfect. And then we hit this place called Field. Fog cocooned the car. We knew the road was straight, but we were driving blind, inch by inch, relying on the taillights ahead of us like Rudolph's nose. My mind went into analysis overdrive. Did we really have what we needed? I think we forgot about food. And what about water? These were the days long before people began packing water bottles to walk around the block. Prepared? Maybe not so much. For the next 35 minutes, all we could do was drive inch by inch. We had no choice but to trust. The checking times. Life is like that. Sometimes we have bumpy rides. The journey doesn't always offer as clear a path as we imagine. Suddenly, for whatever reason, the flow of life appears to reach an abrupt halt, and we are left gasping for a spiritual jump start. These are what I think of as the checking times, when we get to remind ourselves of who we are at our core. What internal resources do we have? Combined in the foggy moment, what we had was determination, a goal, some measure of sensibility, and above all, confidence that together we could get through anything. And we did. Internally, there was no fog. We knew our destination, and time was not a factor. It would take the time it would take, and we would, without question, arrive. And so we did. In The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes wrote, "Undoubtedly, we are surrounded by and immersed in a perfect life, a complete, normal, happy, sane, harmonious, and peaceful existence. But only as much of this life as we embody will really become ours to use." On this drive through the Canadian Rockies, we chose to embody the experience rather than allowing the experience to define us. In our own way, we went with the flow of what was in front of us. Love led the way. The comings and goings. There have been other times in my life when it's been much harder for me to experience, or frankly even to believe, that I am already in a perfect life. The markers for me are the entries and exits, the comings and the goings. These are often the bumpiest of transitions. Being a serial procrastinator, I needed decades to realize that leaving things to the last minute creates only more drama. As a young adult, my moves were sudden and frantic because of my procrastination. The decisions were solid once I made them, but the consequences often involved drawing all kinds of other people into the discourse of my life, asking them to rescue me in a way that stretched relationships thin. Although I seldom forgot my heart, I often overworked my intellect by fixating on fixing. Often I completely forgot my body, the physical reality of the nature of the transition that was being asked of me. This meant I gave up in a heap, floundering for someone to pull me through. What I see now is that flow is a two-way street. We are both coming and going at once. We are entering into something while it is truly already changing. Nothing is ever static. We can put a pin on a map, but we cannot pin down consciousness. It is the underpinning of all of life, continually evolving toward its next creative expression. Holmes says our role as spiritual beings is to do our best to embody the flow that already exists within us. That means practicing not being attached to outcome, yet aware and present to the moment and able to respond accordingly. That is flow. I am in balance with life when my mind, my heart, and my body are aware of and in a type of call and response relationship with each other. Doing this requires profoundly deep attention, more than a bit beyond patting the stomach with one hand while circling the other hand atop our heads. Flow happens when all is synergized. Practice the flow. So, how do we practice the flow? How can we make it a tangible experience in our lives? Humanity has created all manner of rituals to support us in creating flow and bringing ourselves present to the moment. At the smallest end of the spectrum, we find the quaint old Western concept of etiquette. These practices offer tiny hints of how we might respond to our common yearning for conscious connection in the everyday. Consider arriving at a social gathering, maybe a simple dinner party, or your grandmother's birthday, or a wedding. Then consider how we greet each other when we arrive and what we say to each other when we leave. Usually there is a verbal as well as a physical form of greeting. Maybe it's a handshake, a hug, or a hearty pat on the back. Often the same ritual we use in greeting is performed once again when leaving. These forms create the opening for something bigger, a shared experience of the flow of life. Miss out on either end, and the experience can be shallow. Marking our passages. An old Peanuts comic strip shows Linus reading The Brothers Karamazov. His sister Lucy asks him what he does with all those long Russian names. Linus quips, "I just bleep over them." Living life in the flow isn't about bleeping over things. It might feel like a clever shorthand, but the essence of the life is lost when we bleep over our entrances and exits. Consider the bumpiest rides of life, birth, and death. How much would a practice of being in flow with mind, body, heart aid in these transitions? The way through things comes with practice. We can have the individual chop wood, carry water practice, but around the world there are many other opportunities that help pave the way for life's bumpy rides. These are the gift of ceremony and rites of passage that help us consciously mark times of transition. Birthdays, holy days, entering adulthood, graduation ceremonies, weddings, and now even ceremonies to mark the transition of divorce, smudging your old home, and doing the same with your new one, honoring our entry as elders and marking our way to our final days. In today's world, we commonly hear that we need none of these ceremonies to mark our accomplishments. We don't need weddings. We don't need convocation ceremonies. We don't need retirement parties. But missing these moments means we rob ourselves of spiritually moving into these places of conscious transition. And we rob those around us from acknowledging the comings and goings as well. These public passages aid us in building our internal and eternal flame. They remind us that as we walk through this life, we soar to our greatest, deepest, and most profound levels when we engage our full selves, body, mind, and spirit. They remind us that when we are one with the one, we become one with all. On our drive on that snowy day, we could have chosen to turn against each other, to blame and shame and question and allow anger and fear to enter. In the middle of the storm between leaving and arriving, we chose to lay ourselves down to what was. As the Persian poet Rumi wrote, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there." We turn now to Mark Waldman and Andrew Newberg, MD's monthly column, Science and Spirituality. Meditation makes you smarter. Measuring intellectual intelligence, or IQ, has always been a controversial topic. It measures some forms of cognitive skills, but not others, like creativity or social skills, what Daniel Goleman calls emotional intelligence. IQ tests focus on measuring certain types of abstract problems that are supposed to help us perform better in school or attain higher-paying jobs, but other scholars argue that the tests are based on a series of false assumptions, cultural biases, and outdated methodologies. Neuroscience looks at the brain functions when we are attempting to learn something new, and especially our ability to consciously stay focused when solving a wide range of problems using skills stored in memories, many of which were formed in school. This involves brain structures that make up the central executive network, CEN, an area that is active when we face decisions that help us achieve our desired goals. Obviously, the better a child can stay focused and consciously organized, the higher that child will score on standardized IQ tests. Here's the problem. Your brain isn't built to stay focused all the time. If you did that, it would lead to work burnout or, for children and adolescents, school burnout. We now know that your brain has to constantly shift between focused attention and mind wandering, a daydream-like state where your unconscious imagination creatively works to solve problems in ways that IQ tests can never measure. Neuroscientists call this part of the brain the default mode network, DMN, something you can experience every time you close your eyes and relax. However, if your brain spends too much time lost in that mind-wandering daydream state, you'll have trouble focusing your attention to stay organized and carry out important tasks. To be successful, you need to create a balance between the CEN and DMN, between your analytic mind and your creative brain. This is where a third neurological process comes into play, the salience network, SN, an area that includes the insula and anterior cingulate, both of which are stimulated by many forms of contemplative practices like mindfulness, loving kindness, and compassion meditation. This is the network that gives our life and actions meaning and purpose, and the SN helps regulate the brain's shift between the CEN and DMN. It is a center of emotional regulation, social awareness, empathy, intuition, and self-love qualities that meditation enhances. Any abnormal functioning between these three networks is believed to cause most of our psychological problems. And when a person learns how to consciously manipulate these three networks, IQ test performance increases. You'll achieve more goals and feel more satisfied with your entire life. The secret is to practice self-reflection as you remain deeply relaxed, observing your thoughts and feelings without judgment, and then asking your intuition, or God, or your higher self, for insights about your problems and your desires. Listen to those whispers and combine it with all the outer knowledge you accumulated over the years. Remain curious and be playful as you explore new knowledge and experiences. And maybe, just maybe, you'll experience what brain studies suggest is enlightenment, the ideal balance of all of the intelligences in your brain. A special thank you to Joe Kovac for turning us on to the new IQ research. Follow this article to help balance your analytic mind and creative brain. We turn now to the March-April issue of Spirituality and Health, a Unity publication, and to Jackie Fernandez's monthly column, The Joy of Texts, A Touch of the Divine. The Northern Hemisphere springs to life as winter recedes. Rebirth, new beginnings, and growth are the spring themes of the natural world, and so it goes that all major faith traditions have spring holidays that reflect these themes. Hindus celebrate the arrival of spring with Holi, the festival of colors. Ramadan, which shifts based on the Islamic calendar, frequently aligns with spring. Buddha Day is in May. Zoroastrianism marks the spring equinox with Nowruz. The Lakota perform first planting ceremonies. Judaism celebrates Passover, and Christianity observes the Lenten season with Holy Week and Easter. These ceremonies and rituals encompass a range of spiritual practices and share fasting and feasting, gratitude for the earth and its bounty, and great celebration for the beauty of life and the natural cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. There's an undeniable grace in the promise of spring. The power of life having rested under the silent cover of winter gives way to expression. It can be easy to forget, in the dead of winter, that the barren tree branches, dead grasses, and dried-up creek beds are as much a part of life as the fully bloomed lilac bush, lush garden, and raging river. As nature comes alive again, you may find a similar experience in your being. The days grow longer, and we are drawn to our own spring rituals, spiritual and practical. The movement from deep rest and stillness into renewal and growth is as much a part of our own nature as it is of the planets. It is a graceful dance that unites fauna and flora and reminds us that we are one with all creation, one in the power of life. You may find an experience of winter giving way to spring in the inner terrain of your soul, one unrelated to the timing of the actual change of seasons. Perhaps your work life, relationships, or a special project has felt dormant, lifeless. Remember that this is a stage in the natural cycle woven into all life forms, not a destination. The best in you has already been witnessed by the divine in you. As a divine expression of spirit, you are anointed to live your life in a way that only you can throughout each change of season. The four Gospels of the Christian scripture tell a story of Jesus being anointed by a woman. While each Gospel has its own version, their notable similarities reveal a sacred truth. Anointing is a universal practice, and in first century Jerusalem, it was an act of subversion for a woman to anoint a man. Typically, it would be the host, a man, who would welcome a visitor into his home with an anointing. In the Gospel account, Jesus refers to the anointing as preparation for his death and subsequent resurrection. That all four Gospels recount a woman giving the anointing to Jesus is remarkable. The qualities of grace, intuition, and the vessel for birth are all represented in this woman who witnesses Jesus, the Son of Man. The best in her sees the best in him, and in the simple ritual of anointing, she blesses the power of life in him, even as he enters a time of suffering and death. The promise of healing and the perseverance of life are carried in the oil. The rising of the divine feminine, as witness to the Son of Man, is a dynamic present in each of us, calling us to witness our inner divinity, the promise of rebirth through every season. Bless yourself with a simple anointing, any oil or perfume will do, as you usher your own season of awakening. We pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications, and you're currently listening to the Philosopher Program with your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. You can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. Last week, we had just begun The Great Awakening, Our Prophecy Transformation and the Attainment of Embodied Enlightenment by Mike Dooley, in conversation with six renowned channels, and a foreword by Jesse Herman. We had started the introduction, and we'll go back to the beginning of that. I've always been intrigued by the stories of so-called ascended masters who've graced the face of the earth, inspired by their miracles, wisdom, love, and the wild implication that what they've done, we can do, and greater. Jesus said as much. Whether naive, hopeful, or both, I've always believed these tales to be true. And by this stage of my life, for reasons I'm about to share, I fully expect that one day soon others will attain a similar mastery over the elements, undoubtedly the wisest or most loving among us. I now even dare wonder, maybe even me? But where to begin? How to start? Such musings were incomprehensible when I was a younger adult, especially since I knew of no creditable modern stories of any such masters among us. Instead, I dove deep into my fascination with metaphysics to live deliberately and create consciously using creative visualization and learning of its supporting principles, and I've had a pretty stellar four decades at it. First, by practicing what I learned to thrive in my own life, and second, by writing 17 books of my discoveries and hosting 4 world tours, teaching it to others, though not without some setbacks and heartbreak. I was so fulfilled for so long that I began wondering with some concern, is this it? I mean, how many times does one travel to Tahiti in their life? And how many millions of dollars are we to raise for our favorite charities? The old answers of more, better, faster weren't hitting it for me anymore. So on December 16th, 2018, sitting on a veranda overlooking the Bay of Manzanillo in Mexico, alone at home, I started making notes on my laptop. I began an online journal titled Enlightenment, and in it I entered about a half dozen of my favorite passages on the topic of spiritual illumination from a few of my favorite books, like Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah, and Jonathan Livingston Seagull, both by Richard Bach, Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, and Ramtha, The White Book by J.Z. Knight. This collection and my own related notes were to remind me that there could be much more to my life if I'd simply give these ideas more of my attention by returning to reread them from time to time. Come January, however, I was back on the wheel of Maya, entangled in the illusions, travel, and concerns of my life, until the following December. Back on that same veranda, I was slowly, and finally, making my way through Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, overcome with bouts of euphoria as the weeks rolled by, stunned to be reading actual tales of yogis and their superhuman achievements chronicled by the author's life in this highly celebrated and much respected international phenomenon. And as if the rekindled excitement for my own hoped-for self-realization, another expression for enlightenment, wasn't already maxed out, I had a life-changing call with a woman named Sarah Landon, serendipitously on December 16th, 2019. She was a new acquaintance and channel of the Council, who told me during our scheduled session, without any earlier discussion of my interest in enlightenment, you are undergoing an incredible shift into fully realizing yourself as the absolute master that you are. Every single one of you came here to be part of this great transformation of consciousness. You came to wake up, to come into the realization of the embodied masters that you are. Me? I asked incredulously. Yes, you. You and many others, because of where your collective consciousness now is. The next phase of your life will be a living mastery within the human experience before you officially take your seat at the table with the ascended masters. This was followed by 60 more minutes of further revelations, aha moments, and silent expressions of, oh my God. I hadn't been this excited since I was featured in The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. The Council also spoke of where my inner work now lies, living more in the present moment, ending my addiction to logic, and learning to open and allow spirit to guide my actions. More on this in Sarah's chapter. My ascension wasn't going to be effortless, at least not until I first laid the groundwork. January swiftly arrived, along with the COVID-19 sequestrations, during which I found dozens more books on self-realization. See the recommended reading list in the back of this book, from which I constantly updated my own online journal. Of course, I still wrestled with my mortal dramas, as I do to this day, but I did so less and less. Journaling, reading, contemplating, and meditating became my new routines. I've learned that spiritual enlightenment is indeed attainable, and yes, we, you, can and will inevitably experience it in this lifetime or beyond. It's not, however, an end game or an all-or-nothing achievement, nor does ascension mean you suddenly move beyond the physical plane. It simply means you've raised your vibrations, more on this too in the chapters ahead. Still embodied and very much alive in the physical world, you continue to love and learn even more, ascending further, until you truly love all and self, or rather, until you love all as self, at which point you'll either stick around to help others awaken, or you may choose to move beyond the physical plane. I've long understood that we all wanted to be here, in these sacred, illusionary jungles of time and space, but now I better see that this was to enjoy them as they are, and can be, not just to ascend our way out. The breathtaking and fleeting nature of our experiences here had not been known by God, all that is, or divine intelligence, not a God as portrayed by any religion I know of, until he thought to create and experience it as us. Being here on the razor's edge of reality creation is an extraordinary gift. Yet, as you can no doubt attest, when one is metaphorically lost in space, the ride can be quite bruising, or worse. It can feel like life is happening to you until you realize that you are happening to life, which is when you finally grasp that you and your thoughts are your life's only variable. Until then, a little bit of enlightenment, or a whole lot, would certainly add to the adventure. Essentially, the wiser you become, the higher your vibrations. the easier life gets, and the greater your capacity to love. You'll experience ever-increasing levels of joy, clarity, energy, confidence, abundance, and miracle-making, overt Jesus-like miracles, which will also be discussed in the chapters ahead. Eventually, your vibe will get so high and the love so intense that you'll literally glow, hence the stories of auras and halos, while other latent biological features are activated that will ramp up all your clair abilities, clairvoyance, clairsentience, etc. Halt physical aging and unleash a plethora of other gifts and powers now dormant within you, dear reader. Are there not ancient teachings that say the same, offering that we are made in the likeness of God? Steeped in fear, however, we never came close to grasping the true meaning of this statement. This natural evolution of consciousness will eventually lead us to burning bush moments and quantum leaps forward, not just one, but many during our unending progression. Meanwhile, as Ram Dass said, we're all just walking each other home, albeit still at a very early point in our spiritual learning curve, with home being a remembrance of and return to pure truth, the truth that we are all of the divine, different lenses through which the same God sees, creators of our experience, bound by a love that far exceeds love as we've known it. We are not only one of many, but we are one with the source of many. Our false beliefs of separation will fall away, yielding a new unity consciousness. And as with every mass migration, whether wildebeests on the Maasai Mara or sparks of God playing small, there are forerunners. The latter are known as ascended masters. Their example and teachings are to waken us from the great sleep that befell spirit as it first conceived of and began exploring these jungles. They are the ones who choose to hang around after their illumination to help others, show us the way, and reveal who we really are and what we're truly capable of, as did the Buddha, for example, which literally translates to the awakened one. Inevitably, sure sounds good, but who wants to wait? At the very least, we can now begin moving toward our own awakening with awareness, desire, and will, which is what this book is about. Surprisingly, at least for myself, as the council and all the channels fluent on this topic teach, you cannot find realization through the brain or the mind. In the words of Sasha, channeled by Lisa Royal Holt in Chapter 1, enlightenment is not something you do. It's more of an undoing. It's an allowing achieved through a profound waking, relaxation, and recognition of life's absolute, utter perfection. Of course, there's even more to the equation than meets the eye. As gods ourselves, far more than we presently know ourselves to be, there are other realms, dimensions, and parallel universes of which we're also a part, but no longer aware. Some we came from, others are beyond our comprehension, all filled with their own self-reflecting sparks of God, adventurers, much like us, some physical, others ethereal, most of whom are further along than us spiritually and technologically. Many are even aware of us in our continued slumber of confusion. They were once there where we are now in terms of our spiritual evolution and awakening, true family members on the path. Motivated by love, they eagerly wish for us to know more of our origins, the possibilities that exist for our fullest expression, and to accelerate our own embodied enlightenment. So they whisper to us through automatic writing, channeling, in the sleep state, or any other way they can, sometimes leaving clues or signs, other times infusing us with ideas and inspiration when we least expect it. Careful not to give too much too soon, or the romance of our adventure might be spoiled, like turning on a light in a darkened movie theater. They also don't want to risk our over-reliance on them, preferring to cultivate our own ingenuity and resourcefulness. Ours are the kind of lessons we must learn for ourselves, although asking for and receiving their help, they say, is allowed. This is the tightrope they walk, responding to the anguished cries of humanity over millennia, yearning to encourage and empower us while not crossing a line that would do the exact opposite. They bring forth some of the most relevant and exciting clarity now available concerning our potential and the very nature of reality. And not coincidentally, relating it to the rising energies now sweeping planet Earth, changes that were prophesied long ago by seers like Nostradamus, the Book of Revelation, and the ending of the ancient Mayan calendar, which signified the less celebrated, if even acknowledged, beginning of a new one. This is the age of Aquarius, a time when humanity takes control of the Earth and its own destiny as its rightful heritage, with the destiny of humanity being the revelation of truth and the expansion of consciousness. Some people will experience enlightenment in advance of others and therefore be recognized as the new leaders in the world. The puzzle pieces are finally coming together. Herein, you will learn from six such voices of truth, living channels, who speak the language of awakening through mastery of self. World-renowned mystics who, along with those they speak for, wish to help us help ourselves, not to dispel the illusions of time and space, but to help you sooner have conscious dominion over them as pioneers of the human race. Our sessions were part of a 2022 live online event that included more than 3,000 attendees. Every week for 6 weeks, I featured a single guest, each channeling higher vibrational beings, some presently living a physical existence, albeit from other star systems, and others non-physical. My own assimilation of life's truths has been profoundly accelerated by learning from different teachers, even when, as you're sure to find, there may appear to be contradictions between them. Yet with a little time to dwell upon their perspectives, invariably there will follow a burst of clarity from which their differences merge into a more complete understanding of what it means to awaken. You'll also find that some of their teachings may only seem to be indirectly related to awakening, focusing on ideas and techniques that can help us better navigate time and space, to more deliberately live our lives as we learn to harness our power, which actually makes their teachings directly related to awakening. These are exciting yet pivotal times. All of us are facing new forks in the road of our lives. Resistance to change and new ideas can be seen boiling over in the streets and among nations, bringing to our attention long overlooked imbalances, which means they can finally be healed. Even COVID-19 marked the beginning of a great healing, forcing most of humanity to rearrange their priorities. Everything, even the painful and ugly, has a gift for us, exactly the one we'll most benefit from. Such is the poetic nature of the universe. The questions before us are simple: to continue living as merely human, or to live supernaturally? To see yourself as separate from everyone, or to recognize our unity? To be motivated by fear or inspired by love? We can literally see the camp set up around the world where others have made their choices. The apocalypse is at hand. The final confrontation between the light of truth and our prehistoric ignorance. Final, because ignorance is on its last legs. Every day in the news, we see the biblical metaphor of people being ideologically separated like wheat from the chaff through their own choices. Those prepared to do the inner work necessary for illumination, and our numbers are rising exponentially, will gain mastery over the physical world. Thy kingdom shall come, thy will shall be done, on earth as it is in heaven. May the words that follow help you realize who you really are, what you're truly capable of, and how to live at all times guided by love within the sacred eternal now. May they help you remember that you are and have always been the eyes and ears of the divine, come alive in the dream of life, an awakening process otherwise known as enlightenment, self-realization, illumination, ascension, soul integration, and Christ consciousness. The fabled, misunderstood, and long-awaited second coming. Yours in the adventure, Mike. A note from the universe. One of the most comforting thoughts of all is knowing that all roads lead home. Even more comforting is finally understanding that you never left. From all of us back home, the universe. A note on the questions asked in each chapter. Each chapter contains questions and answers that were exchanged during the live sessions mentioned in the introduction. Some of these questions were asked by me and some by audience members. To make it clear who asked the question, audience member questions will start with a speech bubble icon and be enclosed by quotation marks. Questions without this were asked by me. Free videos. Each of the featured channels in this book partook in a live online event that created the content of this book. Free clips of their entrance broadcasts are available for our readers. www.tutadv.club/TGAV. Chapter 1. Thriving in New Landscapes of Consciousness with Lissa Royal Holt. About Lissa. Lissa has been a seminar leader, channel, and author since 1985. She is the co-director with husband Ronald Holt of Seed of Life Institute, LLC, and the Soli School, an organization whose primary purpose is assisting individuals understand the nature of consciousness and to put this understanding into practice in daily life, providing a roadmap to the process of realizing true awareness beyond the human identity. Lissa is best known for her in-depth explorations on the nature of extraterrestrial consciousness and how it impacts human evolution. Her books, The Golden Lake, The Prism of Lyra, Visitors from Within, Preparing for Contact, and Millennium, are classics in the field of channeled literature, as well as her highly acclaimed Galactic Heritage Cards, a one-of-a-kind set of 108 inspirational cards based on the cosmology she introduces in her classic book, The Prism of Lyra. She also has an extensive library of audio material based on her work since the late 1980s. She's been interviewed on TV and radio around the globe, including by the Discovery Channel, Shirley MacLaine's radio show, an interview with ED, Extra Dimensionals, on Gaia TV. She's appeared in countless magazine articles over the last three decades, and counting. Lissa channels Sasha, a fourth-density Pleiadian female. Sasha extends an aspect of her consciousness to Lissa for communication during appropriate times with students and clients, even as she, Sasha, tends to her own life elsewhere in this physical universe. In the following text, Sasha will refer to herself as we, as she shares her knowledge about how you can thrive in new landscapes of consciousness. She breaks this down into four parts: holographic consciousness, planetary shift in consciousness, doing the work, and meditations. Welcome, Sasha. Greetings, my friends. It's an honor to be invited to share with you. Thriving in New Landscapes of Consciousness. Holographic Consciousness. We're first going to give you some metaphors to help you understand the nature of consciousness so that you can better understand what's happening on Earth at this time of accelerated evolution. We like to use metaphors because language is a very constrained tool that does not really express the nature of the truth that is beyond the time-space reality. First, let's look at the idea that you have probably heard called oneness. What does that really mean? It's a nice, airy-fairy concept, but what is it based on? We want to introduce you to the idea of holographic consciousness. Imagine that you have a regular photograph of an apple in your hands. Then imagine that you tear up that photo and you spread the pieces all over a table. In order to reassemble the image of the apple in your reality on the physical plane, you'd need to gather each of those pieces of the photograph, much like a puzzle, and paste them together. This is how you see reality in your limited time-space state. Now, imagine you have another photograph of an apple and you tear it up into many pieces. However, this time, we're beginning with a holographic photograph, which means that when you pick up each of those separate pieces that you've torn up and you look at them, the complete image of the apple is still there. And if you were to tear up those pieces some more, you'd find that no matter how small you tear them up, each would still have the complete image of the apple. This means that every piece is a fractal of the original holographic pattern. Consciousness is exactly the same. So when we say there is really only one consciousness in creation, that is meant literally using the metaphor we've just talked about. You are like the image of the complete apple. You as individual beings are like little fractals of the one, like the little pieces that appear to be torn away. Somehow you've convinced yourselves that you are separate, that oneness is something out there to someday maybe achieve. In your evolution and awakening process, many of you are beginning to suspect that you are a hologram of the One Consciousness. This will make it possible for you to also understand yourself as part of this oneness from which you can begin living with a dual consciousness. That means that while you are aware of yourself having chosen a physical lifetime, at the same time you can also possess the awareness of yourself as the complete apple or the complete hologram. This is a necessary and important bridge. This dual awareness will enable you to eventually operate more and more from the realm of the whole or the one rather than from the individualized self. This awakening is a process. The first step, you could say, is the intellectual understanding. More significantly, however, is achieving an emotional understanding through your experience. This may happen perhaps through meditation or even through what we call contact work, which is you contacting us or the angelic realms, for example, in sessions like this one. When you do, your intellectual knowledge can then become visceral wisdom within your being, and that is when consciousness changes. Practice and play this with this idea of yourself as the hologram, even though you fooled yourself into believing you're a singular being. The dual consciousness. Is that ego and higher self? You could label them that way, yes, but it is way more than that. Actually, you are jumping a little bit ahead of where we're going. You're correct in the sense that as long as you are in a physical body, you are going to have some type of mechanism that creates individuality. At the same time, what you call higher self never goes away, nor is it something out there. It's another version of you. It isn't really a self at all. It is a field of awareness. As you refine your awareness, you'll begin living more from the higher self field or the hologram and less from the ego or the individualized self. Density versus dimension. Now, let's sort out the whole idea of dimension and density. As you know, different teachers and channels use different words, including in this very book, sometimes for the same things, creating a little bit of confusion. However, as you sit with what we have to share with you on these ideas, you'll begin to feel the one truth being expressed through all the channels in various creative ways, no matter what words are chosen. If consciousness is really one, imagine it then, emanating the brilliance of a pure white light. Imagine also a crystal or a prism that you put near that white light, which would serve as the separation mechanism. As the white light passes through the prism, voila! You have a rainbow. Any rainbow you see in your physical reality after a rainstorm is a perfect example of this. If you look closely at one, you'll notice 7 light frequencies in the colors. If you look really closely, you'll see that those frequencies are not sharply divided, but they actually blend and flow into each other to create the full spectrum. We can apply this idea to the One Consciousness as it went through its process of fragmentation. As consciousness went through a similar separation process to create the physical universe, 7 densities were created. We'll share more on this terminology later. Each of the densities represents a different characteristic of consciousness, from the most separated, unaware, to the most integrated, fully aware. This also includes the type of consciousness, for example, that makes up the very building blocks of your reality, such as atoms and molecules and the like. Most of this information goes beyond the scope of this chapter, but for those curious, we share more about it in our book, The Prism of Lyra. When you're experiencing this separation as a physical being, it feels as if you're focused in one life, in one reality, and all other lives are in a different time. However, your consciousness is actually expressing itself in all the other rainbow colors of density simultaneously. 2 of these densities, the 3rd and 4th, have particular importance for what we are about to talk about next. On your world, planet Earth, for the last many thousands of years, you've been experiencing the greatest level of separation possible, which is 3rd density. It's why you forget who you are and your connection to the universe. You live in a very polarized reality, often fighting each other, and you feel very, very alone and disconnected. You are now experiencing the transition to a new state of consciousness, 4th density. This is when your deep sense of separation, aloneness, and polarity begins shifting into a more integrated reality. Most physical civilizations go through this evolutionary process. This evolutionary process takes a while, but your civilization has very recently gone into one of the most intense transitional phases of the process, which probably will not surprise many of you. This is what we mean by how the concept of density describes the characteristics of consciousness. The characteristics of third density display more separation and polarity. The characteristics of fourth density include the beginnings of integration, healing, and expanded awareness of the one. Ego is stronger in third density and weaker in fourth density. In the following graphic, you can see a representation comparing the densities. And I'll briefly try to describe the graphic. It's three outlines of the human body, and in 3D, there are many, many, many black dots in the upper part of the body. 4D, there are many less dots, and in 5D, there are just 5 dots. And it's titled Compression and Decompression. The density of the black dots represents how tightly compacted matter is in that density. This is not something that's measurable with any of your modern instruments. It may better be understood as an energetic density. On the left, for third density, you can see that the light of your being, often referred to in spiritual circles as prana or chi, doesn't have a lot of room to move around. It is limited in its expansion due to the denseness of matter. This is the reason for the term density. Matter is very, very densely focused energy. In the middle, when you move into fourth density, you can see that matter begins to decompress or open, and the prana now has more room to grow and expand, which mirrors the expansion of consciousness in this density. This prana is your own light as a part of the light of the universe. It is not anything outside of you. As you move into higher densities, this expansion continues. For example, in fifth density, there's even more light with an even greater decompression of matter, and thus an even more dramatic expansion of consciousness. At some point, physical incarnation no longer occurs, and consciousness is no longer anchored by the denseness of matter. So where does dimension come into this? Well, we will have to wait until the next program to find out more about that. So tune in next week with our Philosopher program. And as always, I wish you a beautiful, joyous, and peaceful new week.